Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Adult Child of Dysfunction. Today we have with us Abigail Gazda. Abigail is an author, a publisher, a podcast host, and the CEO of Hearts Unlimited. She's a clarity coach and supports souls speaking up about their silent struggle and unleashing the authentic leader within. I can't wait to have this conversation with you. We had a quick conversation earlier, but welcome, Abigail. So happy to have you here.
Yes, thank you so much. And just because I imagine people will probably look me up after, it's Hearts Unleashed. Hearts Unleashed. Yeah.
What did all I good. Say? Unlimited?
Unlimited, which I'm sorry. It's all good. No, it's all good. Hearts Unleashed. And because it's my company name and it's the podcast name as well. So I imagine people might look that up.
And I'll put all those links in the show notes. So anybody that missed that will get it fixed.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your story. I know all of us people that are in coaching and healing and all of that stuff have a story that kind of preceded that. So talk to us a little bit more about what got you to where you are today.
Yeah, happy to. I'll try to like kind of bring it in and bring it concise, because I started what I would say as my journey inside of getting my education major, like becoming a physical education and health teacher with a secondary in special education. At that season of life, at that age, that was the only way I knew that people with a heart like mine used it. Like, you know, get paid to be you, that it was the most authentic career I could think of. And so I did that. I got my degree. I played basketball. I was a basketball coach, all of that. And it was year one probably where I realized, like this ain't it, you know, the walls felt too small for me. And so I taught for 3 years, and education's funny because it actually kind of lives inside of growing up inside of dysfunction, where you think the next time will be better. You know, you go on summer break and you get a little bit of breathing room and you're like, okay, next year will be better. And so I tried that 3 times and it wasn't better. And I said, okay, then time to make an adjustment. And I went into gym management, which was, funny enough, because it was still in alignment with me. However, being a corporate manager wasn't necessarily the best fit either. And then I was introduced to life coaching, and it was a world I was not familiar with, but I hired someone at the gym who was getting her life coach training. And she asked me to take a look at this work. She said, everything I'm being taught to say, you're already saying all of it, like just talking to me. And so when I did go observe this work, to consider it, I felt like I had found the promised land. Like they were speaking a language I didn't know I spoke. It was the language of the heart, right? It was vulnerable. It was emotional. It was raw. And I just didn't grow up in an environment where that was the case. And so it was amazing to me. And I like literally the rest is history, I'd say, but I've owned my business Hearts Unleashed for the last 8 years. And I started my business and going to ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Homes. I started doing that at the same time, actually. And then I went through the 12 steps, and that was made a major difference. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. But the rest is history. I've constantly been developing the way that I serve and the way that I share and the way that I help people heal and become restored and also, you know, get back into their power.
Great. I love it. Yeah, it's funny because you said that because I did almost the same thing. And I'll say that sometimes I did what I thought I would, I was meant to do. I grew up, I became a teacher. It seems like that seems to be the path. And it's the same thing. Even when I was going through it and I could see those kids that were struggling so hard, I remember thinking, how do I reach these kids in the masses? How do I build them
Yes.
up before the damage is done? Like, how do you grab them when their minds are so impressionable and they're developing all of these traits and characteristics because they're being taught wrong and they're not getting what they need emotionally, in any way? So it's funny that our path is kind of the same. I have my master's in special education. It's funny. And then it's like, what am I doing now? I'm 55. I'm writing books and coaching.
Yep,
So.
totally, totally. I remember wanting to adopt or foster so many kids, and I'm like, I was overwhelmed with how I felt so constricted in what I was able to do with that,
Oh, yes.
making a difference.
I can't even imagine. I taught a year at Head Start Preschool in a, kind of, I would call it almost an inner city in New Jersey. And I remember 3 years old or 4 years old, one of the little girls, her mother put her on the bus with a note that said, "Miss Tammy, I'm moving to South Carolina. Call grandma. If grandma doesn't want her, call social services." And it was 3 o'clock that afternoon, and there they are coming to pick her up. And her arms are just like wrapped around my leg, screaming, like, "Let me live with you. I won't be bad. I won't eat your food. I won't take a bath." Like, I was absolutely broke my heart. But it just makes you realize that it's out there and it's everywhere. So the more advocates that we have that can be vulnerable and say, "Hey, I was right where you are, and you're not alone." So I love it. So you went through the 12 steps, and I know one of the things that we're going to talk about quite a bit is the difference between emotional and physical sobriety. And we'll talk about that. But when you say you went through the 12 steps, did you go through the 12 steps of AA or ACA?
ACA.
Okay.
So I am 4 years sober as of February 2024, and we're here like real time. It's April 2024. So I'm
Right.
celebrating 4 years sober at this moment. And I never attended AA. I had been going through ACA since 2017 and
Okay.
just attending on and off, actually. And because I travel so much, I never really had like a regular meeting I was going to. I was going where I was finding one where I was at. And then in 2020, I did a Vipassana retreat, which is a 10-day silent meditation retreat.
Yeah.
And that going into that, you have to agree, no drugs, no alcohol, even like no caffeine, no like sexual activity, silence, pure silence. Noble silence is no talking, no eye contact, no body language. So this was like a 10-day full detox. And even the diet that we had was like vegetarian, vegan, and all of that. So it was low sugar, everything. And it was phenomenal. And I knew going into it. So I would drink alcohol and smoke marijuana for a large portion of my life, and young too, like starting young. And it was so much embedded in the culture I grew up in. So it wasn't strange. Nobody would have called me an alcoholic, where I grew up. But I have this one moment that I feel like sharing is, I remember in college we would get caught drinking. I went to a Catholic college, and so you'd get written up and all this stuff. And I had gotten written up like two or three times for drinking. And the counselor, you had to go to a class after so many write-ups. And she asked, how many drinks? And she said, well, you're far above average. Like, that would be considered an alcoholic. And I'm like laughable,
Right.
just if I'm an alcoholic, so is literally everyone, right?
Right.
And maybe that is the case, but to then I had this justification. It was not a problem. I would have probably considered myself actually more of like a binge drinker, like a
Okay.
social binge drinker. But the thing was, as I got older, when I moved away I'm from the Midwest, and when I moved away out west, I just wasn't in the same environment. I wasn't around the same people. I wasn't doing the same things. And I would go days and weeks without any alcohol. And I was like, I think I don't need any because I'm just really happy. Like, I'm fine. I don't, it's not the thing I need. And same with marijuana. So as I'm entering this retreat, knowing I'm swearing it off for at least 10 days, the whole month before, energetically, I could feel it was the end of my relationship with marijuana. And so I actually smoked a lot at that point because I was like, kind of like grieving it and saying goodbye to it. And so from the start of that meditation retreat, the first 4 days, I had the withdrawal symptoms of like the most major migraine headache. It was excruciating for 4 days straight. And I made it through and I kept trying to hydrate and just sit with the feelings and the thoughts. And that was just phenomenal because I haven't had a sip since. I haven't had a smoke since. And I feel really grateful for that. And I don't fight the temptation. I don't struggle with that choice. There's times where I'm like, I could literally just go in the fridge and grab something, or I could go to the store and pick something up. Like, I have that thought, but I'd never choose it because I love my clarity. Like, nothing is worth the clarity that comes with sobriety.
Oh, absolutely. And I can't even imagine 10 days. First of all, I'm just trying to picture 10 days without my coffee. Like, I don't even know if I could survive that headache. I know when I was in the hospital and they had me on a completely liquid diet, the morphine did not take away my caffeine withdrawal headache. It helped my diverticulitis, but it did not help my caffeine withdrawal. And I remember saying to them, can you just put a little bit in my IV? Just one little touch. I don't want it to wake me up and feel happy. I just want it to get rid of my headache. But that's amazing. For the people out there listening that would ever even think about contemplating, I mean, that's a pretty drastic withdrawal, doubled with the fact that you couldn't talk to anybody about it. You couldn't yell and scream and be like, hey, dude, like, what else can I do to get rid of this headache? You were in a silent mode. How did that play into it, do you think?
It was brilliant. And I did have two panic attacks, like full blown, like, you know, like all four sobbing like that. I know people who get it. Right. And it was day like 4 and day 8 that those hit. So I ran out of the meditation center and a counselor would come. There were people who like you were assigned not to talk. And if there was an emergency, obviously we could or would. And so the person just came out to check on me. And then I eventually calmed down and would go back in, but it was pretty excruciating. But the concept of the meditation is to be with what we normally avoid and without any distraction or inhibitors or numbing agents, we are forced to be with all the things we stifle or stuff or compartmentalize. Yeah. And so a lot came up because it was, and you're right. It was caffeine withdrawal. It was sugar withdrawal. It was alcohol, marijuana, like all at the same time. So it was highly intense. And I just kept challenging myself to be with it. But when those panic attacks hit, one was around family and one happened to be around divorce. So I noticed it wasn't so much in relationship with the substance or a craving or a desire or an itch. It was that the things I had used substances to suppress finally had room to come up. And so I spent time being with them and it, you know, crying the real tears that needed to be shed and feeling the bucket's worth of emotion that had been stored up.
And for the listeners out there, if you've never had a panic attack, it is debilitating. Like you literally feel like you can't breathe. I don't know how many people you see go into the hospital, and I've had it happen to me where you think you're having a heart attack. You literally can't breathe. Yeah. So it's something, if you've ever had one or never had one, it's quite an experience. So to be there, at least they have people. So I'm saying I'm suggesting don't try this on your own with no support, because any kind of withdrawal, especially, alcohol withdrawal can be dangerous. So obviously be supervised, but it sounds amazing. I'm like thinking, I wonder if I could chunk out 10 days of my life.
And it's
just
worth
to kind of see, because You're right, though, when you don't have other distractions. I mean, we move in life. When you have an addiction, you literally just move from one addiction to the next. You it just you find because you're finding something to fill that void. Whereas if you have nothing, you have no choice but to deal with the void.
Well, and that's where exactly what we intended to talk about came in, right? Because when I went chemically sober off of substances was when I started to notice my emotional addictions. I filled the void with worry. I'm excellent. I am masterful at catastrophizing. I love me some money issues. You know what I mean? I love the drama or exhilaration of challenges. So I found that even if I was chemically sober, I had emotional addictions that I would distract and entertain and exhilarate myself with as well.
Absolutely. So talk about how you knew you were like, was there a point at which you went, I got this. I can do this.
So I wanted to point out, like, ACA is what showed me the emotional addictions. I think that they were there. Like, anxiety is one of them too, you know, just absolutely scaring the shit out of myself. I don't know if I can cuss here, but absolutely
Yes, you
scaring
can
the heck out of
cuss.
myself with anxiety and worry. And they call it in ACA, I've heard it called the internal drugstore. So those
Right.
are the things that we, you know, take in place of a substance. And so that was enlightening. And I remember the moment, like to your question about I got this, I was a few months sober and my anxiety was like so high, just always, because I was not doing anything to suppress it. And so I like constant just breathing, trouble breathing. And I know a lot of people have been misdiagnosed with asthma because they have anxiety. And I've talked to a lot of people about that. But anyways, I thought, wow, this is sober anxiety. Like, okay, if I can see it, then I can manage it. If I
Yes.
can observe it, if I can be with it and stop running from anything or everything, then I can turn and face it. I know I got this. Like, I've done incredible things in my life. I'm a highly achieved person. I'm going to do anything I set my mind to. Why is this any different?
Right.
Right. And so I really just set out to make sure I had the support I needed. I'm a huge advocate for support too, no matter what budget you're on either. Like, there's so ACA is the prime example, and AA or any of the programs are free support. Get it, take it, use it, have it. You can go to 10 meetings a week, right? Or get a one-on-one coach or a counselor, see what your insurance provides. I've used my insurance for therapy and counseling, and I've coupled as many support structures as I ever could at any given time that I felt was, you know, necessary for the part of the process.
Yeah, and that's so, I mean, community in general, even if it's a Facebook group where you just know and you can go vent and you can get different perspectives and hear people's different thoughts on it. I mean, podcasts are a great way to do that. I don't know how many people I have email me and go, wow, I didn't think about that that way, but now help guide me through this, you know, just to have someone, just to know you're not alone. It's a, I went through, I kind of did, I've done kind of all of, not, I don't want to say all of the 12-step programs, there's a lot of them, but I did go through both aspects of it. I mean, I started at Al-Anon, and then Al-Anon was great, but I felt like it was dealing with the here and now where my parents were kind of gone. I needed to pull up all the old stuff. I needed to actually deal with the stuff that happened. You know, my parents weren't in the picture anymore. But so then I did a lot of the ACA, and then I also went through the AA. And it's really interesting to be able to come at it from all different angles because you get different things and you get what you need when you need it. Hence the subject, you know, or hence the saying, you know, take what you love and leave the rest because it does come at you in different times. And but I love the emotional. So talk about some. Let's say symptoms of emotional addiction, like when you know you have not broken that emotional part. What would you, for the listeners out there?
I would offer one of the primary ones is whatever form of disassociation you practice. So, numbing out without a substance like TV, we can even overuse like working out or obsessing, ruminating. So like I notice whenever I'm really in my head, I'm probably, you know, doing something with an emotional addiction instead of being in my present or being active and participating in wherever I'm at or whatever I'm doing. And so it's kind of like that numbness to life. Not to be confused though with depression, right? Like I think being able to have a proper diagnosis for the things that we're struggling with. I teeter on both sides of diagnoses because sometimes we use them as a crutch and a, like, oh, this is me. This is how I am. And this is the way it is versus like something that can empower you to acquire appropriate knowledge to work with the way that you are or the way that you function right now and sort of create a scaffolding, a bridge from where you are to where you want to be. So I think that one of those major ones is disassociating. And some of those internal drugstore drugs are like shame is a huge one. Mm-hmm. Shame, guilt, self-deprecation, anxiety, worry, paranoia and fear, self-criticism, heavy, heavy self-criticism. I'm really good at that one too. So those are the types of things that we could be on the lookout for. And I like to use a tool called NASR, which is what I explain to my clients: notice, acknowledge, stop, and redirect. Okay. Notice it's happening. Acknowledge it's happening. Like skipping a step, noticing is not acknowledging.
Right.
Acknowledging is not noticing. Those are not the same. So to notice it, like, whoa, like it goes, it creates that like second level of consciousness. You're not just like stuck in it, like this numb version of you, right? The shell of you, you actually wake up to the idea of like, wow, I'm checked out right now. Wow, I'm anxious right now. And I like to take it to the mirror. And I think that's really powerful when we're strengthening the skills. So I'm scared right now. I'm anxious right now. I'm numbing out. I'm checking out. I'm overwhelmed, whatever, just acknowledging what's going on with us. And then I love the stop one because people are like, well, if I could stop it, I would, right? Like, I know, I know. And so I usually check in is like, by when would you like to stop? Okay. So if I'm in a heartbreak season and I'm hiding out, not getting out from under the covers, I'm just watching endless TV or doom scrolling, right? I know at some point it clicks for me that I am scrolling for the third hour now, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, wow, I'm scrolling too long. Wow, I hate myself for doing this. Wow, I should really stop. And I'm still talking about stopping, but I'm also still doing it, right?
Right.
So I noticed and I kind of acknowledged, but I didn't stop.
Right.
Right. So I like, I'm pretty sure this is an AA statement, which is like move your butt, change your, move a butt, move a muscle, move your mind, something to that effect. You
right.
know, what is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Move your mind. Oh, I don't know.
Move your body, change your mind. It's something to that effect.
Yeah. But it's basically get up and move.
Yeah. Like, get up and move, change the scenery. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like to get in the mirror and I stop, like, I'm going to stop. Oh, self-pity is another one. Cause like I always joke and say I'm the mayor of Pity City. So I'm going to have self-pity for another 3 hours. I'm going to sink in. I'm going to take a long bath. I'm going to feel sorry for myself. But after that, I'm going to make myself something to eat. I'm going to answer a few emails. I'm going to go out for a walk. I'm going to take a drive. I'm going to get myself a latte, like something that I know is going to really help me. Cause now I'm talking about the redirect.
Right.
And the redirect for people is my cue for that is what gets you back to being you.
Right.
So to actively stop, to change our scenery and redirect, for me, I can go rollerblading. That's like one of my go-tos, like my for sure things is if I go rollerblading, I'm going to get off my rollerblades 10,000 times better than I started on them, you know?
Right.
So, those are the things that I encourage people to do is the surefire things that get us back into our own energy.
Right. And just redirecting to something positive. I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because, and I love that you said that, I love that you brought up that point of the stop, you know, the acknowledging versus the being
noticing.
Aware, because
yeah.
I just did a talk the other day and it was funny and it hit me. I heard on a podcast and they're like, well, as long as you are aware, everything will fall into place. And I'm like, no, 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 no. there's a lot more steps to awareness. If you look at the 12 steps, is the number one, but there's still 11 steps.
Yep.
You know, so even to shorten it, I'm like, you at least have to be aware. You have to accept that if you don't do anything about it, that you're going to, it could be a do or die situation. It could be just a stuck in this situation for the rest of your life, but it's not going to change. And then you actually have to take action.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like yours is like a longer, more built up version of those three things. But yeah, just knowing doesn't help you.
No,
it helps you. It actually gives you the responsibility though, to now it's in the ball's in your court. Yeah. You know, I say that, especially with kids. I don't know, you know, I don't think we've ever even talked about your situation and whether it was like, you know, were your parents, were your grandparents drinkers? I mean, is this a generational thing? Because most people I run into, it might have skipped a generation. Their parents may not have drank, but their grandparents did. And so the damage to their parents, you were now raised as if your parents had drank.
I mean,
you know, they talk about a para-alcoholic. It doesn't, sometimes it has nothing to do with the actual substance. It's everything, the mindsets and all of that that comes along with it somewhere in the family. That's why it's a generational and a family disease, not just a disease.
Yeah.
But,
well, and I'd love to offer too, is for me and my upbringing and the way I relate to alcoholism and dysfunction is I grew up in a divorced home. And to me, that was the biggest impact because again, we weren't raging alcoholics. We were functional alcoholics. We were happy drinkers and everybody got along and we all partied together. So it wasn't this, like, it wasn't this apparent issue. And then the other thing is workaholism was more of the addiction, right? Like, or the compensating part. So that was where I was able, like, I noticed it in my mom and so we're very high work ethic, high productivity, reliable people, and to the point of exhaustion, burnout, self-abandonment. And that was a big one. Self-abandonment for me is one of the bigger mechanisms that I've used to survive.
Yes. Now talk about you just hit on a totally another situation of talking about the coping mechanisms that you developed. Which coping mechanisms, you said abandonment, self-abandonment was one that you developed. For listeners out there, there is some episodes that I talk 100% just on coping mechanisms, because that is your coping mechanisms that you develop when you're a child and you're in this environment and you're not getting your needs met or you're in survival or you're being a, you could be abused mentally, emotionally, or whatever it is, those coping skills are very hard to change. And they are going to follow you into adulthood until you stop the patterns of those skills. So I know I was a big dissociator and I still am.
Yeah.
I mean, that you brought that up, you know, I can remember times of my life where I'm literally sitting outside of my body going, interesting. And people like, that should have been horrific. It should have been a horrific memory. And I'm like, no, I just literally watched it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's not an extremely extreme, but that's worse than just you're zoning out. And yeah, I literally was stepping outside and going, can't deal with this. Like, I'm just going to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned that's one of the many ways, right? And I think I'd love to like go with those core ones that are very familiar for everybody, which is fight, flight, fawn, and freeze. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people aren't familiar with fawn, which is a big one for adult children, which is to placate, which is to people please, which is to just like make sure everyone around you is happy so that you're not taking the brunt of any, you know, anger or dysfunction. But there's like coping mechanism. In fact, I think a thought that came up before I said that was enabling is also coping, right?
Yes.
So enabling people's behaviors is a way to cope because we're really trying to avoid the pain that we know is pretty inevitable in our environment, right? And so, but I want to shift the word coping or incorporate compensating because compensating is a form of coping, right? For me, I learned or like I internalized that be the perfect daughter, be a good girl, achieve. Those are the ways that I know how to get the love I want. Right. So ultimately, anything we've ever learned to do to compensate for what's wrong in our lives is a coping mechanism. And I wanted to talk on that like high level scale, because you're right. Everybody has manipulated the coping mechanisms to serve them. So someone might say, well, I don't have any of those, but that doesn't mean you don't have a coping mechanism.
Right. Everybody does, because you have to cope. You have to cope.
Right. So like the questions people could answer is, what are the ways that I've learned to survive? Because there's coping mechanisms tucked in there. And then what ways do I learn to distract, or what ways do I distract myself? Cause some of us can cope with reading, and that's not necessarily a bad coping mechanism, but it is a disassociation. You're leaving this world for this fantasy world, right? Video gaming, mm-hmm. eating. I mean, it's endless and it's unique. And we put together our own little cocktail of coping mechanisms. So it might be not, self-harming. However, are you with us?
Right.
You know what I mean? And another coping mechanism is repeating relationships, right? Like sticking with what's familiar. I think that's a really common one.
Mm-hmm.
Not breaking the cycle.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot of that is too, just that your mind loves familiarity. Even though it's not always comfortable, it likes familiarity. So you're going to go, even though you say, I don't want to be like my mom or my dad, but you're going to be with someone that is just like your mom or dad, for one, because you know how to deal with them. Honestly, it was actually easier to be in a relationship with someone that was just like my mother, because I knew what was coming. It was like, I can anticipate. To be in a healthy relationship was very strange.
So
for me.
Uncomfortable.
It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that's a pattern, that's just being aware of these patterns and knowing. ACA is a great group. And a lot of times there aren't meetings like around me. It's really hard to find, but everything is on, there's so much stuff online now.
Yeah.
I mean, even Al-Anon, you can go on there and pick, from 75 different meetings a week and just jump on and listen, or, just participate or not, but you get, I say, if you get on any podcast, any meeting, anything, and you get one little golden nugget, it's one more thing that you have in your toolbox.
Totally.
That you're now aware of, that you can now start processing. And
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's a journey though.
It is. I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's such a journey, and people, I think, just create this illusion of arriving at some healed place where they're forever zenned out, enlightened, reached a pinnacle, and will stay there. And life itself, that is not the function of life itself. There is ebbs and flows, checks and balances, and we have to become okay with those ebbs and the balances and the down seasons, because we are cyclical beings.
Right.
As the seasons change, the weather, right? So do the seasons within us change. And so it doesn't mean our inner work has failed, our step work has failed, our transformation has failed, if we're in a season of shedding, of closure, of completion, where things come to an end, we lose a job, we end a relationship, we relocate, we face problems. Like, it's as predictable as the sun will rise. And so for me, like I mentioned about self-criticism, is like, we can't, demolish ourselves when we feel like we're not always winning.
Yeah. And I was going to say that before, when you it's a lot, there's a lot of stuff to reflect, and a lot of it is self-reflecting. A lot of it is also giving yourself a whole lot of grace. Because like I said, none of this is any like child's fault. And there's so many cliches out there that I just want to like, my parents did the best they could at the time, and like all this stuff. And I'm like, stop. Like, okay, let's just erase all of that. This is what you're dealing with right here, right now. Yeah. We're going to go back. We're going to explore all that stuff with grace. But now let's develop those good habits and let's make those better choices. Because once you are aware, it's now in your court. You can, I was saying the other day, every single day, you're going to have an abundance of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose for them to be good, or you can choose for them to be bad. And now it's just a matter of how you react every time something is thrown at you. But once you get, like you said, get with a group or get with a coach and that can give you those tools to be able to better navigate those things as they're being thrown at you. So.
So much, just so much, yes. Like, and I appreciate, because I've been on plenty of podcasts. I have my own, but I've not so explicitly talked about ACA and AA and the work and this work and the step work. And I'm just appreciating what you offer to people to find, to have a place to go to find and listen and participate. Because you know, if for anyone who's ever attended a meeting, you know, some people go and they never share, right? And because they're there to listen, they're there to absorb and find community and be surrounded by other people. So we know we're not alone. I think there's been so much of my own growth has simply just been being in a conversation, not the participant, but being a part of the conversation. So I'm just kind of like, I felt myself a little overwhelmed by how excited I am that you have something that people can receive from so much.
Well, and it's nice, and it's well, sometimes it's a one-on-one. You know, I do a group coaching, and it's so funny how few people jump in on the group coaching, and it's like, oh, I heard them say this, but I'm gonna let me do get a session with you real quick so we can dive deeper into that. And it doesn't matter how you get the information. I literally started with Al-Anon, and I literally listened. I want to say it was 6 months to a year before I ever opened my mouth, but I was learning a whole lot about the family and the dynamics and everything like that. So, no, I
And it's a lot
appreciate
of information.
you. Oh yeah. And I truly believe you're not given things to deal with until you're ready to deal with them. Because if you try to deal with everything all at once, like you said, that's why it's not a journey that's all of a sudden like, oh, there's a stop sign up there. Once I reach that stop sign, I can ring the bell and woohoo, it's all good. You're gonna unravel layers of your life every step, you know, when you have grandkids and or when you have children, and then you do it again when you have grandkids. And you know, there are some basic concepts that most children with that grew up in that type of dysfunction really have to wrap their hands around, like boundaries, just to survive and function. And I think probably what would you say would be the two, give three biggest. I would say boundaries, people pleasing, and self-worth.
For top three of what?
Just for like three big concepts that you go, oh, okay, yeah, I don't have this mastered. Let me work on this.
Oh yeah. Okay. So I was going to say that at the beginning, actually. So I'm glad you asked it, but because we do not have emotional intelligence in the school systems yet, and it's where we have more conscious parenting going on. There is a tide, a turn in for sure, but man, I wish the education system would catch up. So I want to just say in general, emotional intelligence, right? Like, and that does encompass everything you mentioned, but like self-care and grace, I would include, right? The grace factor was the most pivotal shift for me, because I can intellectualize all this information all day long, but I can't really integrate it without grace. And
Absolutely.
in fact, that would probably be my third. So emotional intelligence, grace, and then integration, because there is a plethora of information and people choose whatever, like there's a lot of awareness and awakening and information. And I was going to say in middle of this conversation too, is like awareness is shit without aligned action. If you
Absolutely.
like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, I know, you know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah.
it doesn't, what you know doesn't matter.
No,
You're
it's
suffering.
no, knowledge is not power. Knowledge with action is power.
And so true integration of this work, embodiment of this work is really pivotal.
You know, and it's so true. I had a very good friend who we didn't know each other long, but we were very close. And she wrote, just finished writing a book, Raising Badass Humans. And it was all about emotional intelligence. And she was getting ready to go in and speak at schools. And what an amazing human being. And unfortunately, she was killed in a domestic violence accident. And, but it's so important. I actually wrote a book just to try to, I don't even know what my mission was, but I felt like when I was teaching, I needed to reach like the masses to try to help these kids. And my book is actually, it's called Helping Children of Alcoholics and Other At-Risk Students. And it's how to identify and empower the disconnected youth in the classroom, but it's more about how to do it without singling them out.
Yeah.
You know, how you can empower a whole classroom, how you can raise kids' self-esteem and teach them grace and compassion. And, you know, it's all of that without having to be like, oh, you live in a dysfunctional family. Let me pull you aside and tell you what you need to know. Cause you know, it's crazy. And we're all in a dysfunctional world right now.
Yeah.
And you know, the level of alcoholism, they say what, 1 in 5 children has at least one addicted parent. So you multiply that by all the other dysfunction of the job losses and homelessness and poverty and divorce and suicide. It's unbelievable what these kids, and if they don't know how to make good choices and they don't know self-love and self-compassion, it's going to be a hard road for them.
Yeah. It's part of step 1 or 2 of ACA. We do genealogy. And I remember looking back and being so, it feels so unjust that we're all like tormented beings. Like, and I say that with love, and it's quite literally impossible to assign fault when you take a look at the generational trauma, generational poverty, generational mental illness, like the alcoholism, abuse, and like, where does it even start? And then like being a part of a generation where you decide it ends with me, you're ending the weight of the freight train you're trying to stop is heavy, right?
Heavy.
And so I really found that a access point to freedom for me, like blameless inventory of the steps, because I was allowed my right to be angry and hurt and traumatized and upset and like have my feelings without needing to assign blame.
Right.
And while also like mentally and emotionally holding the people that hurt me accountable. Like, it's a very interesting dynamic to navigate, but it to really leaning fully into the work unlocked a lot for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And just that you, like you said, the forgiveness part, there didn't need to be forgiveness towards that person. There just needed to be forgiveness towards myself, and let's move forward. And I can't do anything about that. And I wish someone had taught me about compassion and empathy when I was 10. Because it might have been, my whole life might have been a little different. You know, if I had looked at my mother instead of this wild, crazy, abusive, crazy person and said, wow, look at the demons she's fighting. I mean, she was anorexic at 13.
Yeah.
Her father was a child psychiatrist that sent her to boarding school for 5 years when she started cutting herself. I mean, but still it doesn't make it any better. And that's why I still don't ever use that expression with my mom. Like, oh, she did the best she could. I try not to, because I still needed the right to say it was still horrible and I need to grieve it. And I need to be able to cry and yell and scream. And I'm not saying it's her fault, but it did happen. And we have to acknowledge that as well.
Right. Cause justifying it is enabling, or over-explaining is enabling, right? Like, people are due the consequences of their actions by nature. Like, there's natural consequences, and that's part of their journey, right? But to take on everybody's journey, which is something that I naturally do, it's like one of my coping mechanisms is being the mascot, or you know, just trying to carry everybody's weight and be the healer, be the heretic, like all of those things. Like, that's not functional. It's not functional for me. It's not functional for them.
No, you can't do it all. You can't do it all. But knowing, like, you know, you're the mat. Like I was the class clown. I was the distractor in the family, so that everybody thought it was a nice, happy family. We looked super happy. I was always laughing and joking, and you know, what a mask. But boy, it felt good to take it off, right?
Yeah.
So, well, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm like, wow, it's been almost an hour.
Bye.
I know, right? I was like, I could talk to you forever. So 2 things I want. No, that I don't want. I'm asking of you. One is tell everybody if they want to work with you, if they want to listen to your podcast. All of the links are going to be in the show notes, but what is the best place for them to reach you directly?
Directly, just send me an email, abigail@heartsunleashed.com. You can say you heard me in the podcast. I do 30-minute discovery calls with folks if they want to explore what they're navigating together. That's the most direct way. And then at my website, Abigail Gazda, I hang out the most on Instagram if you're an Instagrammer. However, one thing I want to include in the conversation, but also in the show notes is my YouTube channel, because I have meditations on there. Some of them are anxiety attack meditations and
Okay.
sleep meditations and clear energy clearing meditations. So something that came to mind when you were sharing was when I was a resident assistant in college, I had a resident having her first anxiety attack, and I had not experienced someone else having one. I'd had my own, but I thought she was having a medical issue. So, and then the paramedics arrived, and he was like, "You're just hyperventilating." Like, just, they calmed her down and everything. And I swore I would be more prepared for that, like from that day forward. And I've, as myself, as someone who has struggled with anxiety, I love offering the medicine of meditation. And I think that guided meditation is one of the best ways to get the practice we need to be able, as beginner or intermediate meditators. And so I'd love to encourage people to head over to my YouTube channel, which is my full name, Abigail Rose Gazda.
Okay, perfect. And I will make sure that's in the links for everybody too.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And then last thing I always ask my guests is for the listeners out there, and they're keep in mind they're at all different stages. We never have any idea who's listening and what
Totally.
they've gone through, what they've been through, or what they've already done to try, to move forward. What would be some words of advice or words of wisdom? One piece of advice, something.
Gentle. That was the most potent part of my journey, the most challenging. Be gentle with yourself. You cannot hate yourself into a better state of being. So if being hard on yourself worked, it would have worked by now. So why don't we try being gentle on ourselves?
Love it. Absolutely love it. So thank you so much for coming, Abigail. I appreciate it. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks, listeners. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And for everybody out there listening, you heard it again, but I absolutely love that. Just be gentle to yourself. You've heard me say it 1,000 times. Treat yourself like your own best friend. It's absolutely the best way to be happy. Thanks. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.